Let's say Mother's opening prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother. Beloved David. Saints and sages of all religions. I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Peace.
Amen. Do a short meditation. you have a reading of David's blog. It's in just sequence, completely random. Let's see what God has to say. This is September 17th, 2017, Promise of a New Day. There's a picture of a sunrise. And let's see, he says something, I think, in preparation. The constant rehearsing of problems that might happen, that have happened, and underlying anxiety that drains our energy. What is this all about? Being prepared for when things go wrong is a prudent thing to do. Having a filled pantry, working flashlights, first aid bandages, all are good things to have around just in case. However, the conscious and unconscious minds take this to an exaggerated degree and makes warning sounds in our bodies and heads 24/7. Far from useful, it becomes destructive as it produces false warnings, skews our judgments, can make us overfunction or withdraw from life, and burns up life energy without benefit, wearing us out and robbing us of joy. As I have often said, it has been a rough couple of thousand years. Our history is filled with the lack of food and starvation. Lack of food and starvation, not. Wars with its pain and miseries, lack of justice and stability, extremely difficult working conditions and little medical care, limited opportunities. It has not been uniformly bad, but a large share of the world's population have had it very difficult. While there are definitely difficult lives in the world today, there are also great advancements on so many fronts, and increasingly, a great number of lives are so much better off, statistically better than ever before. However, the echoes of traumatic experiences can resound even when surrounded by relative peace and prosperity. I worked with a psychiatrist who was making a study of World War II Holocaust survivors and their children. And the survivors of these death camps oftentimes got about their lives not talking about or seemingly devastated by past experiences. However, their children and children's children exhibited post-traumatic stress, seemingly for no apparent reason, until you considered that the ungrieved horrors that the parents and grandparents went through were passed down to their progeny. Their Holocaust surviving parents did not have the time or energy to grieve for their devastating losses. They simply had to get on with their lives to build something better for themselves and their children. But the emotional charges from those losses were passed down to new generations, waiting for the day that they should be worked out. We have all come from tough stock, and the many losses and difficulties of those previous generations can be passed down through families. It can explain much in what may seem unexplainable symptoms. Then you add on the layers of past lifetimes a soul has experienced during this dark Kali Yuga, the emotional charges of past life experiences lurking deep in the subconscious mind. This complex weave of the psyche reveals why unexpected challenges can seem to occur from thin air, as well as unexplainable strengths and talents we simply come with fully intact from birth. Some can look at that list of atrocities and problems and think, how can there be a God? Others can look at that same list, see how well we all do in general, how much kindness and caring there is in the world, how much healing happens daily, and think, it is only by the grace of God that decency is as prevalent as it is. I, of course, come down on the side that God's grace, always active and present, making us yearn for a better world and desire for growth, along with grace is human free will, which can choose horrible actions, creating a daily testing field for right action for every individual and group. Family history, past lifetimes, and of course, the environment we live in interlace their influences, both positively angelic all the way to demonic, like the immune system fighting off toxins, germs, and viruses that threatened our health. From within and without, so we need a superb mental and spiritual immune system to create and maintain total health and happiness. Although you may strive to maintain a positive environment to live in, you may freely admit there are many things outside of your control. And if those negative things beyond your influence are given preeminence in your mind, they will bring you low. The greatest boost to your physical, mental, and spiritual immune system is God remembrance. Through God remembrance, the first thing that happens is that you take your mind off the merry-go-round of the mind. that feels overwhelmed or powerless, and it aligns you with the supreme power and divine intelligence of God. God is positivity itself, hope, faith, and a doorway to all things, to all things possible. Remembering the attributes of God, O Lord, you are all-powerful, wisdom and light itself. You are peace and love without limit. You are my all and all in all. Chanting God's name, meditating upon him, listening to inspiring talks and music. It elevates your mood, changes your thinking, stimulates smooth life energy, and purifies the mind. Both your conscious and subconscious minds are uplifted through your contact with the superconscious mind. Of course, you may have forgotten, you may have legitimate concerns in your life, but you no longer turn these into a worry machine. Now you see those possible problems in the light of God. He is working out his will through you, his willing instrument. In fact, it is for this purpose you have taken incarnation, and there is no place you would rather be than here and now, because this is where he has placed you. Recently, a devotee went through a serious operation. She said that while in recovery, she felt that she was in the hospital for some greater reason. She had deep conversations there with a young man with addiction problems, visited many on the ward, and was a bright light. And in fact, the nurses gravitated to her room due to her calm and positive manner. When I was in the hospital, I too felt that this was my opportunity to pray for all those there, including the caregivers. With the mind so busily engaged in bringing the light of God to a situation, there was no time for worry. This world is an evolutionary climb out of the dark ages, and yes, there are challenges. However, with God in your heart, this is a new day, a bright day full of promise and glory. God is on the move, and whether the world around you seems to reflect that or not, it is certainly true for you as you lead the way into the path of joy, light, abundance. Grace operating within, without, and all about. Put your mind on God. Put your mind on God. Put your mind on God. Mm. And your life is changing already. Feel the peace and joy of his ever-abiding presence right in your own heart and soul. Learn what it is to live a life without fear, always aware of his ever-abiding grace residing in your heart, mind, and soul. Be it so. So I have my Bible here with some verses, but I don't think I'm going to read them. I think what we just read couldn't be improved on in that sense. So this is David's fifth anniversary of David's Mahasamadhi. Tomorrow. And this today is a celebration of that fact that we benefit from these cardinal points in the year of the birth and the passing of great masters. Kate and I have a little app that comes up on the screensaver when the TV is on and we're about doing other things, and the pictures from my camera are there, so there's a limited set, but two of the pictures were of David's body in his casket, and it disturbed both of us each time they came up. It's rare, maybe you go a week or so, but we'd see it and we'd say it's too hard to contemplate. So I took them out of the mix, not out of disrespect, but rather to not shock the grandkids or to other people coming through. Because most of the pictures are just travels in church and family. But I have to tell you, it just hurts too much to see those pictures, as I know it does for many of you. The shock of it all. It comes back into mind the unfairness of it. And yet he's here with us now. He's been rummaging around in our consciousness all day today. And what we're all feeling here is him and Mother and Master. When I first met Mother, she was 71. David made it to 65. And Master only to 59. So, though this was a shock for us, for the devotees, the disciples of Yogananda, the great Master, that day must have been a shock too. Mother was told by an astrologer, we heard in a recent tape, that she would die in 1986 or when she was 86 years old. And she said, I don't remember which one. And I think this was in the late 70s when she said this. And she was 86 years old when she passed. We all think if David could have had even 10 more years, what it would have been like. We wouldn't all be such lost souls. Now I say that with a smile on my face because there's no way he would accept that statement. Because as I think of him, nothing is lost. He wrote so much. There's so much of his work to bring out of such high quality. And all of these talks and works teach us for sure, but they also bring us in contact with him inwardly. They make us think of him. Do any of you want to comment? I'll move the microphone kind of into the room, middle of the room.
He's back on.
I don't have much more to say.
I think, Mary, you and Steve should talk about David in the early days, if you have any memories, just to bring him from that time
to
people's minds. Because you both knew him in those early days.
We were all monks together.
Mad monks.
Fellow master.
But Steve, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, I can remember us walking down an alley, the four of us, including Michael McCurley, smiling and talking and having a great time. Michael was kind of one of the monks as well. I still miss him like crazy. Yeah. And I don't know, David, all through the time, always had the great smile and so kind, and smiling eyes, even twinkling. with such integrity and care and lovingness.
And humor.
And humor. Always good for a laugh. And I think we all felt the power within that man, you know, from the very beginning that, that he was going somewhere in God.
And Mother slowly drew our attention to him by starting with asking questions of the group and then looking over at David and saying, David, what do you think is the answer?
And you think, oh, here I am on the spot again.
Yeah, exactly. why is he picking on me? He never, of course, had that attitude at all.
No.
He just applied. I know that you could see his mind working. He applied all the things that Mother had been teaching him.
He thought he was safe back in the back corner in the dining room where she couldn't see him.
That's true. That's true, too. He always sat in the back. He was often well in deep meditation.
He's such a good example of submission, because he shared how difficult it was. It wasn't his nature to be out in front, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And sharing his journey. And Mother directed him to do that.
Mother pushed him out on the stage, didn't she?
Mm-hmm. And I saw him for a lot of one-on-one sessions, and it was a very stressful time in my life. I was always very stressed out, and just his lovely energy, grounding, calmness, compassion, it just helped me so much.
Yeah, he'd been through a lot himself of that type. So it's, by the time you knew him, he had well balanced all of that, and he knew how to pass that on.
Mm.
I was thinking of the significance of the fifth year in Mother leaving the body in 91 and David really beginning deeply into his ministry in 96, his own ministry.
95, yeah.
But bringing on new folks in 96, yeah.
A lot of people's first Creo was at 96.
Yeah.
David.
That was David's first Creo that he gave to
right.
me. Although he'd helped Mother, and he taught the refresher the year before for the older Creo ones, but he took that so seriously. He was really, he really had to think it through.
Quite a gift that to be someone who's so scholarly and also so personal, you know, and reading his writings and thinking about him preparing for each class or workshop or retreat, not in the end, but in those early days. How much work he would put in.
Yeah, he would.
And practice and rehearsal and then the writings.
I loved his humor in the retreats. I always found them so educational, and yet he was so relaxed and
it was fun.
Lots of fun.
A lot of times it was fun, yeah.
Oh, lots of laughing going on.
I remember him
sad.
talking to him at one point, like a week before a retreat, and kind of like, so David, what's it going to be? He's like, well, I'm not quite sure yet. God hasn't told me.
Wow.
Then you'd get to the retreat and it would just be this amazing home.
And Carla has done all the paperwork.
Yeah, I've seen
the last minute.
Do you think you were waiting?
Yeah.
Carla was and really waiting.
Right, and sitting at the typewriter or the computer monitor and console.
There is one. And I always remember from classes thinking of what Geraldine was talking. And so many times you would ask me, Greg, how about if we do a little thought experiment? And then he gradually walked me through a whole different outlook on something. And I tried to really bring that home because I have opportunities to practice that with others now myself and to realize you need to move someone slowly from a perspective. Shock and awe doesn't often work very well.
Yes. It was that rewriting of the script technique it's still applicable. Let's rewrite this.
And then just to hear him tapping and another opportunity. Let's try a thought experiment.
Let's see how this goes. Let's move forward a little. But I never felt any judgment, pressure, just lots of support and
that's
availability.
That's the mark of a master. That's the mark of a master,
And being very present for every person that came before him, thinking, our children, our grandchildren, and, even though they may not have always, they knew he was somebody special. And even if they didn't accept him as a guru per se, he was somebody very special and they always wanted to be in his presence. And really, it really mattered to them what he thought about something. Just thinking about the ashram, they always said his smile. That's what they all focused on, his smile. He had the best smile.
I'll go get that. Thing from Swami Muktananda doesn't need it.
I think there are so many people that met David and spent time with him and decided, I want to be like him. Yeah, I know I did.
Yeah. What Larry's getting is an email that Swami Muktananda sent to Carla, and she shared it when they found out that David had left the body.
This is a couple of days after it, isn't that right? Our own Carlaji, your loving email has been received conveying the information about the memorial service for our beloved and revered Davidji scheduled to be held on the 18th of this month. What wells up in our mind at this point are the fond memories of the long association of Davidji and all of you with the ashram from the late 1990s and how he was highly influenced by the inspiring life and mission of Balabhapa, Parampuja Mataji, and more deeply connected with Parampuja, Swami Sachidanandaji. Davidji's radiant face with the ever-smiling, loving, and blissful approach endeared himself to everyone at the ashram. Though Davidji felt sick very seriously and was hospitalized many a times, what is more striking is the stoic self he possessed in spite of the untold stress at the physical level. The dedicated, loving, patient service rendered by you in taking care of Davidji and also updating all friends about his state of health periodically is really remarkable and touching. Vinobaji's words on Gandhiji's passing away seems relevant to be quoted here. When I heard of Bapuji's death, my immediate reaction was, now he has become immortal. Time has only strengthened that conviction. When Bapa was in the body, it took time to go and meet him. Now it takes no time at all. All I need do is close my eyes and I am with him. When he was alive, I buried myself in his work and went to talk with him only now and then. Now I talk with him all the time and feel his presence near me. The sages speak to us of the immense range of the soul, the self, capital self. We reverently accept their teaching. So long as a great soul lives in the body, his power is limited. But when he is released from the body, his power knows no bounds. And that's from Vinobiji. And then back to Swami Muktananda. We also remember how keen he was to be in ashram in November 2019 to take part in the concluding program of Pujya Swamiji's birth centenary year. Though not in physical body anymore, he will continue to be a source of great inspiration and guidance to innumerable spiritual aspirants. We, including Nalini Amma, Shraddha, Shruti, Chandrananda, Chandrama, Bimalama, the list is endless, and all in the ashram join in paying our humble homage to our beloved and revered Devaji. Deepest love to you all. Muktananda. Please offer any thoughts you have. Feel free.
Memory just came back to me of after Christine left the body, I told David, I needed him to stick around to be here when I'm getting ready to leave the body. And his immediate response was, how can you be so selfish to keep me trapped in this body that long? You really would be that cruel.
And he probably said that with a smile.
Yeah, yeah. And so when that resonated down to my soul to not be contented with him trapped.
And Master talked that way too, you know, with the deer, the story of the deer, of course, and then other people keeping them in the body. Is it proper to do so? It was quite clear that when people, Master was around, you know, it was difficult to leave the body. An interesting thing. When Carla's mother passed, they were down in Florida. And they left for the day, and she passed while they were gone. Mm-hmm. They had a memorial service, finished everything up, and they hadn't even changed their flight.
Yeah.
It happened just so mysteriously.
I worked in a hospital, and so many stories of relatives leaving the room just for a few minutes, mm-hmm. and that's when they go. Yeah. Or they're waiting, you know, they're waiting mm-hmm. for someone, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or when a relative or a loved one says, you can go, it's okay.
Right.
You know, yeah.
Well, Mother, Kate and I were just talking about Mother's passing, that she asked Barbara to go down and get something to eat, you look hungry or something like that.
And that's when
that's when she passed, yeah.
Wow. Interesting.
Well, you know, it's if you know the master is leaving the body, then you can come and be with them without burdening them. But if you are the type that, you know, we all are, who resist it, the master probably has a hard time saying no inwardly. It's hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
I had written in my long-term care wishes, you know, that I wanted David to be there with me at the end. And I even had a feeling when I was doing that it wasn't going to be, but I, you know, pushed that down pretty quickly.
But the thing that David said to me in 100,000 different ways was like, don't worry, you know, choose to be happy. Life is created to be enjoyed. And I was quite a worrywart, and I'm free of a huge amount of that now.
Yeah, that's good.
And I'm also learning how to enjoy my life and just experience more joy. Because at the time he'd say it to me, I was always saying, yes, but what about this terrible boss I have? Or what about, you know, worrying about Max? You know, how can I not?
Mm.
Or whatever it was. Mm. And but it's like in the last, just this year, it feels like oh, now I get it. I'm still starting to get it, finally.
I went to a memorial service for my cousin, who's my closest cousin, Mike, yesterday. And so many people came up and were saying how kind and wonderful and what a great sense of humor he had. And I always like to say something with crack a smile. And they called him Kind Mikey, because and that's what so many people at that service had said, and but also with his sense of humor, which always reminded me of David. And so the night before Mike left the body, I decided I'm going to go make him crack a smile at least one more time. And so I brought this Christmas ornament that was in the form of a pickle that yodeled when you pressed a little button on it, you know. So Mike was, I don't know if he was asleep or something, but I walked in and he opened his eyes and I gave him the yodeling pickle and he cracked the biggest smile I'd ever seen. No, it was a joy to have that happen.
Judy and I had the privilege of...
Were you trying to say something?
Yes, I was going to say, Judy and I had the privilege of traveling with David and Carla for years. And it was always so much fun. And you'd just be in different spots and just being in the presence of a master. It was so wonderful, and yeah, that's a joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got some special time with him for sure, you and Judy.
Yeah, it was just so many memories that are just life changing, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And always fun. Always fun.
So hard to explain.
So hard to explain.
The idea that just being in someone's presence can change your being.
Change your being.
Very true, yeah. I sometimes would be doing things for David, and in pretty strange positions, like we put a solar system on one of his RVs when we were down in, I think, Brago Springs or somewhere down there. And so David was writing at the table, and I was underneath running the wires of his RV, and there really wasn't any room, but it was still a real laugh. And David would talk to me through the floor and come out and see how I was doing. It was just, you know, and that's just the way all the jobs or all the, you know, things that we did together were just great.
Yeah.
even when something might not be very fun on a worldly level, David was always, what's the fun? What's the fun? When he went with me to go all the places in town in Kanengad, having to do with my car being stolen and having to fax something, and it had to be on government paper, and we had to go through all these different steps, and it was hot, you know, and it was trudging all around, and he kept on saying, isn't this fun? Isn't that fun? And I was like, with you? Yep, it is. But, you know, it wouldn't, most people wouldn't have considered it fun, but it was, David. Just that, yeah, what's the fun? What's the fun?
The Shakti that comes through his writings as well. Wow. And how beautifully everything's written, just like Master. And these deep, profound truths, just sentence after sentence.
Well, I was going to say just earlier, because it came into my mind, a conversation I had with Swami Satchidananda. And I was talking to him about being with Mother. And I said, and this would apply for me and David as well, and probably, and some of you may find that it applies to you. I said, when I think about time that I wasted with her, that I could have been, you know, asking her this question or being just more focused or something. You know, I wasted time when I was with her. And he said, there isn't a devotee alive that doesn't feel like that about their guru. So it, but it does strike you sometimes of the opportunities we all had. You know, to be with them, and did we make the most of those opportunities? And of course, in some ways, it's not our fault; it's our level of consciousness. But that's why I guess we have to focus now and have the opportunities, like Vinobaji was talking about where they're more accessible even now. You don't have to mourn the fact that you didn't access them as much as you could have or should have, because they are even more available now. If we just learn how to access that.
Now he has become immortal. It's a nice comparison that Swamiji gave for you.
I think of how thankful I am to have been pulled across the country to cross paths with David, and that you find the guru and the guru finds you, and I have one touchstone that I felt like I was in the right place when we ended up in Bellingham, as I used to run up on Seaholm Hill behind the campus. And I had read stories about David going up on that hill when he was a student and looking out over the city. And on the loop, I was trying to, in my mind, always pinpoint where must that have been. But on my loop, there was a giant fir tree in the valley I ran by that had a huge om painted on the side of it. I was like, that is great. It's like I'm in the right spot. Congratulations. Listen hard.
It's an interesting experience he had, because it's a universal type experience that he had early on. That was early on with Mother. Mm-hmm. In which he could see God everywhere. Very interesting.
In so many ways, feel like I'm following his footsteps and his hints, trying to listen very closely.
All he asks.
And then Yoda says, don't try to.
I'm here, see? Hard to believe. Funny how time works in your mind, because sometimes it seems like it was just a short time ago we were with him. And then other times it seems like decades ago.
But the other thing I was just saying to somebody is, if you think of all the people in your life and somebody that died back, like mother passing in 1991, how many memories do I have of those other people in my life where I can say what they said? I can feel the touch of her hand. There's such, the memories stay with one of those great ones. And the other people, except perhaps, you know, a very beloved relative or something. That, but even then, you maybe don't have those same, the quality of the memory is different. And these great ones stay with us.
This, yeah, you're right, Kate. There's like a warmth and a richness to each memory, I feel. Was oftentimes I felt a little guilty because I would always go try to sit by David at Loon Lake or at any place where, you know, he was, where there was an opportunity to sit close to him. And I felt guilty because I thought, well, I should let people that don't see him as much get to sit by him. But I don't regret that at all. Like, I just was greedy for my guru, which I guess.
I felt that way about signing up for sessions with him. The minute I heard that he was coming to town for counseling, I phoned Christine on, is there a spot? And she'd say, oh, I'm so impressed. You always phone so fast. And I said to David, like, am I coming too much? Like, am I being greedy? And he said, leave it up to me to tell you. Yeah. That was really freeing.
Get your miracle, Christine would say. Go in and get your miracle.
Well, I was just thinking of, how did I land up? Hearing David speak, and all of a sudden, I was, boxes of stuff were coming and meetings, groups where people were meeting at the house. In the beginning, people didn't like to come because they did not like Mother. They had a really difficult time with the strength and the power in her voice, and it was David that they wanted. But they came. But like Jerry says, as soon as anybody found out David was coming to town, it was like the doors were being knocked down. And I could never, I just never figured out. I still don't even know why was I picked. Why did he pick me to be in service up north all those years? Although there was times for humor and there was times for this gentleness, I often think he must have, or I must have been the wild child, because there were a lot of stern moments. I can remember one time sitting David was speaking to a very large group who were at another residence that had more space. And I think my chin dropped and maybe a soft snore. I don't know. But there was that lick at the back of my head. And I'll tell you, the sparks, the lightning, the universe, everything. I mean, I must have just like, I don't know if everybody else was aware of it. And he just carried on. But my body was electrified from that, I'll tell you. Just, you know, there were times, two most highly charged times for me would have been one in the first Kriya in Seattle. And the second was during the time that David gave Kriya in Prince Rupert. To be so much a part, Michelle was there for that. Mm. To be so much a part of helping for all of that preparation. Mm-hmm. You know, the energy in my house when David, before he married, and then when David and Carla came, I thought there were elephants upstairs or there were storms because I would sleep in the downstairs. It was very strange to feel light energy, heavy energy. Sounded like things were being thrown around upstairs. I never asked what was going on. But it was always, my house seemed very different after David would leave. And it would give me the strength to carry on until the next visit, you know, being at a distance. Just some of the times with David. But like Jerry, as soon as we found out he would be at Christine's, was there a spot?
So he was the elephant in the room?
I do not know. Well, it's funny because there were times when I thought that I was married to an alcoholic and I thought there were demons in the house. Mm-hmm. When David wasn't there. And there were times that I thought there was some kind of purging upstairs. I'm not going up there. It's very noisy. Mm-hmm. Like it was enough to, that you could not sleep.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, I don't know what was going on. I mean, you read his time at Cloud Mountain and some of the stuff that he writes about and shares, you know, that maybe it's possible. Maybe there was a lot of stuff going on, you know, the toxicity that would have been present. Something.
As all of you. Oops.
Sorry. I'll go.
I was just going to say, as all of you are reminiscing, I'm in my own little world going through all sorts of incredible memories, just little things and big things. I guess as far as my contribution today, I would like to say that I never had a one-on-one meeting that I would book with David. I never felt any draw, not that I was resisting David. I wanted to be with him all the time, but there was never something that, oh, I have to talk to David about this. Because as soon as I was with him, there was no problem whatsoever. everything was perfect in my world when I was with David, and it got to be an obsession with me to be with him. And that's how we ended up traveling with him, because I had to be where David was. It wasn't a wanting, it was a necessity. And but there was one time that Ricky actually booked an appointment with David. It was at their Camino home. And it's like, gee, I wish I would have had something to talk to David about so that I could have that nice special time, but God didn't give me that draw. And so after Rick came out, he was totally in another world, Ricky was, and And, you know, David knew Judy still wanted to be with him, even though she didn't need a personal meeting. So off we went for a walk, Rick and David and I, just down to the water. Everybody went down there on Camino Island, just a short walk. We stood by the ocean, and David wanted to have our picture taken, just David and I. And that was really beautiful. And the picture was taken, and Rick was gazing off into the ocean in the background. And I was just totally content, as I always was with David. And as an aside, he gave me a very beautiful spiritual experience at that spot. And it's nothing I could describe at all. But at least he gave me a picture so that I would know this is when this happened in our wonderful journeys. So many wonderful, wonderful, wonderful journeys. That's all I can say. You might have Judy crying too if I continue.
You know I love that picture too, Judy.
Yeah, for sure. I remember someone wrote a book about Ramana Maharshi, and he just talked about being in his presence, nothing wanting. And that sums it up for all of us. He filled every personal need, needs we didn't even know we had. And that's what it's like in the presence of a great master. And Mother was the same. Absolutely the same with me. David had more of a human aspect to him compared to Mother, but still divine. Mother was just such a powerhouse, and I was in total awe. So with neither David nor Mother, I had any question. I had no questions for either one of them, because just being with them answered everything.
I would like to share if you can hear me.
Yes, we can hear you, Mira.
I just was looking at emails received from David over the years, and
Mira, can you lean closer to your mic because you're coming in and out?
Yeah, you bet. I was looking over emails received over the years from David, and when he would write so clearly to God, tell he was looking straight at God within you and not yourself, not your little self. And so I have an email where I wrote to him, and he must not have been feeling well in 16. And I said, I want you to know that my thoughts surround you with love, adoration, and God's pure light sometimes a day. Thinking of you and God, it's little in my mind. You are one, body's well-being is hands, love and healing light. And he responds, my dearest one, capitalizes one, so that I know, I get the sense that he's writing to one and all pervading. Thank you so much for your loving thoughts. Truly, you are a treasure of my heart. All victory to God, all victory to the light, David.
Mm-hmm.
Like pure, pure gold.
Yeah.
I receive that. It's not me he's looking at, but and I just really hope to be that way.
Well, with that, Mira, we'll do our closing prayer. Thank you. Please pray with me, O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet. And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace. Bliss. Amen.